Now, New York City is still one of the largest hotspots for COVID-19 cases in the country and has been for weeks. This has stressed the healthcare system there, and both supplies and staff have come from across the country to help. Jackie Christensen is a nurse practitioner who first traveled from Wisconsin to New York City to work in an emergency department during the COVID-19 pandemic in early April. We talked with her back then. Now she's just returned from her second stint in New York. Jackie, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me again.
You joined us about a month ago, Jackie. You were in New York. You were working in a COVID-19 emergency room. You just came back. What were you doing in this second installment there?
So the first trip I was in the emergency department, like you said. The plan originally for the second trip was to go back to the same emergency department, but the needs out there changed a little bit. They actually called me while I was on a layover on my flight to go back out there again to switch me at the last moment. And I'm in an intensive care unit now, actually. So a little bit of a setting change, and the medicine's very similar, though.
Yeah, what are some of the differences in being in a COVID intensive care unit as opposed to that emergency room?
So most of it is really just intensive care. So in an emergency department, I'm doing triage. I'm figuring out who needs to go where and what care they specifically need right now to be life-sustaining. And an intensive care unit, on the other hand, is more long-term planning. So how do I get this person to recover enough that they can leave my ICU and they can ultimately, ideally, go home? Or in the other case, how do I assist this person into death, unfortunately. A lot of our ICU patients, so the reality is they do die.
Now, you've been sharing your stories on your blog and here on the air as well. Why was it important to you to make sure people were hearing the stories of what you were seeing there?
Well, honestly, I think the protests are a good indicator of why it is that it's important to have a perspective that's actually on the ground for what's going on. I think it's very easy to get disconnected from what's happening in a place that seems far away like New York City, especially when you're in an area like Wisconsin that hasn't yet had a big surge or hasn't yet had a major problem with the hospitals being able to keep up.
And in your blog, we've got a link, by the way, at WPR.org/Central Time. You share the story of a COVID patient who was approved for a lung transplant. Can you tell us some of his story?
He had a really heartbreaking story. So he was in his late 40s and otherwise was a completely healthy young man. Had a wife and a couple of teenage daughters and whatnot. So he was a perfectly normal young man otherwise. So his story was he was totally healthy prior to COVID. He caught COVID. He had been in our ICU for about 3 weeks or so. He was on the ventilator briefly. He was just well enough to be able to come off of the ventilator, but not so well that he was able to get off of respiratory support. His lungs were very extensively damaged, and that was really the only damage that he got. So he was, when you have COVID, it's very, very difficult to qualify for a lung transplant, but because of his age, because of his health conditions, that he didn't have any prior, and because he didn't have any other real problems other than the lungs, he actually did qualify for a lung transplant. We had to work pretty hard to even get him qualified to go to get the transplants. His story is particularly heartbreaking, though, because while he was eligible for a transplant, and while a transplant wouldn't necessarily, he may not have gotten one, or, you know, the transplant may not have taken, it was a chance for him, at least. During transport, something about his mechanics failed. We think that the BiPAP machine on the ambulance failed. Unknown why, they had probably been using the BiPAP machine on the ambulance rig all day long, but during the transport, which was about 15 minutes between our ICU and the ICU at the hospital he was going to get his lungs, he completely deteriorated. He ended up having to be put back on the ventilator, which disqualified him from getting the lung transplant. And he just quickly went downhill from there. He wasn't on blood pressure support prior, and he was after he ended up on the ventilator again. And he just, the last that I knew, I'm fairly certain that he's deceased now. I couldn't tell you 100% for certain, but the last that I knew, his family, they had actually allowed his family into the bedside to say goodbye, which is not something we do unless you're actively dying and in the process of passing away. So, it was just really a particularly heartbreaking story because here's this really young guy who it wasn't a 100% chance, but he at least had a chance until that happened, you know?
We have a caller who says his girlfriend is travel nursing in New York. Do you have suggestions of coping mechanisms for a healthcare provider in that setting, the a similar setting that you've been through?
Oh, honestly, I'm just living everything day to day. I have a day off in the ICU every 3 days now, so I'm on three, off one, in part because it's stressful to be in an environment that I'm not used to. I can do my own thing in the emergency department and be fine, but ICU is a different animal just because I'm not used to the mindset yet. So being in it, it's the same thing if you're hopping from facility to facility. It's getting in the mindset of where you're at and figuring out what your resources are. It's very stressful. So just trying to take things one step at a time and just try and stay in the moment and try not to look back on what has happened in the past as best as you can, at least. From my experiences, the coworkers have actually been very understanding for the most part and very, very, very helpful. So hopefully that's the case for the girlfriend as well. But, just, trying to make sure that they know what your situation is too, that you're, that you're presenting yourself as somebody who's there from out of state to help, but may not necessarily know everything.
You are seeing people as patients, as people. In the media, at a distance from it, we see, numbers, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of cases. What would you say to people to try to remember that these are people we're talking about when we hear the numbers?
Honestly, I feel that's actually part of why I wanted to share the story of that, of the man in his late 40s, was that it's hard to remember that these are people. I mean, I even forget that these are people sometimes. My ICU has 16 beds, and, we sometimes refer to people by their bed number and not by their last name, for example. So it's, that's why I've been writing some of these stories about specific people now, is just because it's so easy to forget that, 10,000 people may not sound like very much in the scheme of a 5 million population city, but there they are. They had families. They had kids. They had spouses. They had mothers and fathers, perhaps. So I'm trying to keep the connection as best as I can. It's difficult though, especially when you're talking about something so permanent as death.
In our last few moments, you're headed back, I understand, for another assignment soon. What will you be doing this time around?
Well, the theory is on Monday I go back again for the ICU, and they've got me a schedule and whatnot. They had me a schedule last time, that said, so I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like it's really certain until I'm actually on the ground. So theoretically, ICU again, I may end up back in the emergency department. I may end up in a long-term ventilator unit, because a lot of the people that were discharging from ICU, the roughly 15% of people who are lucky enough to survive the ventilator, they're actually, we're finding that when they wake up, they're not breathing correctly without the ventilator anymore because their lungs are getting so damaged. So the hospital that I'm working at actually has a long-term ventilator unit set up that they are starting to staff now as well, and they're taking patients from around the city to be in a ventilator unit for long-term, because we can't very easily send somebody home when they're attached to a breathing machine until they've learned how to use it themselves.
Well, Jackie, we'll leave it there. Thanks for coming back on the show to update us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's Jackie Christensen, a nurse practitioner who's traveled twice now from Wisconsin to New York City to work during the COVID-19 pandemic. And as we just heard, preparing for a third assignment next week. You can follow her experiences on her blog. We've got a link to that. You can find it at wpr.org/centraltime.